As we left, Liza's mother took my hand and said playfully, "So, from now on the music fields will have one more regular attendant. Watch your heart. As for me, I'll stay home today. It won't be long before I find food for my soul on earth." We departed cheerfully. Young women accompanied Polydor and Astasius, who were talking amiably. Liza and I took the Airbus, and soon disembarked in one of the squares of the Ministry of Elevation. Liza, walking beside me, said affectionately, "You are going to meet my fiancé. I've told you a lot about you." "It's funny," I observed intrigued, "that one would find engagements here as well. Why not? Does love dwell in the mortal body or the eternal soul? On earth, my friend, love is like a gold nugget hidden among rough stones. It is so often mixed in with people's needs, desires and lower tendencies that people rarely distinguish it from any ordinary pebble." The explanation was logical. Seeing that I agreed, Liza continued, "The betrothal is far more beautiful here in the spirit sphere because our senses aren't obscured by the veil of illusion. We show ourselves as we really are. Lysania and I have failed many times in past earthly experiences. I must confess that most of the falls were due to my thoughtlessness and lack of control. Males on earth still do not fully comprehend the liberty that social laws grant us. Seldom do we use it to help our spiritualization. Instead, we often abuse that freedom in a slippery descent towards animality. Women, on the other hand, have had, up to now, the advantage of being submitted to much sterner discipline. In transitory earthly life, they are oppressed by our tyranny and made to bear our impositions. Here, however, we go through a readjustment of values and learn that we are never really free until we learn to obey. It seems paradoxical, but it's the perfect truth, Liza. Have you any plans for a future earthly experience?" "Why, of course. I must increase my spiritual accomplishments and pay off my debts to the earth, which are still considerable. I believe Lysania and I will return to the physical plane in about 30 years' time. Meanwhile, we intend to settle down very soon in a happy little home of our own." We then arrived at the music fields. Lights of exquisite beauty bathed the park. It was like a scene from a fairy tale. Luminous fountains spouted out their waters, forming wonderful designs. The sight was quite new to me. I was about to express my admiration when Liza spoke, "Lysania always comes here with her two sisters. I hope you will make them a pleasant escort." "But Liza," I returned, doubtfully, considering my old marital status. "You know I am still bound to Zelia." My friend burst out laughing, and added, "Well, I never. No one is trying to encroach on your sense of fidelity. Yet I don't think marriage should make you oblivious of social life. Have you forgotten how to act as a brother, Andre?" Rather embarrassed, I also laughed. We were now at the entrance. Liza approached the gate and bought our tickets. On entering the park, I noticed a great number of people around a graceful stand where a small orchestra was playing some light music. Flower-bordered paths extended before us in several directions, leading to the park's interior. Noticing my appreciation of the songs I heard, Liza explained, "At the outer edges of the fields, several styles of music are played to please the personal taste of each group of those who cannot yet understand the sublime art. In the center, though, there is universal and divine music, the higher and sanctified art." Indeed, after walking along pleasant lanes, where each flower seemed to rule in its own kingdom, I began to hear an exquisite melody. On earth there are small groups that favor fine music, while the multitudes prefer their own regional music. Here, however, it was the opposite. The center of the park was crowded. I had already seen numerous gatherings in the colony, such as the festival held in our ministry in honor of the governor, but what I saw in this park exceeded everything that had previously filled me with awe. Yet the brilliance of the scene was not due to superfluity of excess of any kind, but rather to the artistic blending of simplicity and beauty. The women there exhibited refined elegance and good taste, without any excess which could detract from the divine simplicity. Boughs of great trees, different from those on earth, adorned the lovely, softly lit arbors. Loving couples lingered along the flowery lanes. While groups of ladies and gentlemen animatedly discussed lofty and constructive topics. Although I felt insignificant before that selected assembly, I also felt a silent sympathy from those who glanced at me. I heard parts of discussions concerning the physical sphere, didn't detect even the slightest trace of malice or reproach of incarnate men. They discussed love, intellectual culture, scientific research and constructive philosophy in atmosphere of understanding and goodwill, without any clash of opinions. I observed that those of greater enlightenment lowered the vibration of their intellectual power while the less endowed tried to raise theirs. In numerous groups I had heard reference to Jesus and the Gospel, but what impressed me most was the prevailing feeling of joy in all the conversations. Nobody referred to the Master with negative vibrations of useless sorrow or unjustified discouragement. They remembered him instead as the supreme instructor of visible and invisible earthly organizations, full of understanding and kindness, but also conscious of the energy and vigilance necessary to preserve order and justice. I was charmed by that optimistic community, which seemed to be the fulfillment of the hopes of many a noble earthly thinker. Although enraptured by the music, I heard Lysis explain, "Our harmony instructors absorb rays of inspiration in the higher spheres, just as earthly composers are sometimes brought to spiritual planes such as ours, where they receive melodic expressions. They, in turn, transmit those impressions to human ears, after adapting and adorning the themes with their own genius. The universe, Andre, is fraught with beauty and sublimity. The eternal and shining rays of life have their origins in God." At that moment, a graceful group approached us. It was Lucinda and her sisters. Lysis put an end to his explanations so that we might welcome them. Chapter 46, A Woman's Sacrifice. A year had passed in constructive work, which had been a great solace to my heart. As I gradually learned how to make myself useful and find pleasure in serving, I became more confident and happy. Although I yearned to return to my earthly home, I had not yet been given the opportunity. When, on several occasions, I had meant to ask permission, something seemed to hold me back. Had I not received the kindest help from everyone? Wasn't I surrounded by the friendship and esteem of all my companions? I recognized that my wish would have been granted if it had been useful to me, and I decided to wait patiently. Although I was working at regeneration, Laura and Tobias constantly reminded me that Minister Clarence was still the person responsible for my stay in the colony. I often met the generous Minister of Assistance, but he never mentioned the subject. Clarence never changed his reserved attitude in the exercise of the authority inherent in his obligations. Once, during the Christmas festivities in the Ministry of Elevation, probably sensing how deeply I missed my wife and children, he touched lightly on the subject, telling me that the day was not very far when he would accompany me to the old home. Joyous hope had filled my heart, and I thanked him emotionally. Still, it was now September, 1940, and I still had not seen my dream realized. The knowledge that I had spent my time in useful service in the chambers comforted me. Our work went on uninterruptedly and I worked tirelessly. I had become familiar with nursing in the different wards, and had learned how to read patients' thoughts. I kept in touch with poor Elisa and tried my best to assist her indirectly through her struggle for spiritual recovery. But as I gradually reached emotional balance, the desire to visit my loved ones became more and more intense. My homesickness hurt me deeply. The only solace I had were my mother's occasional visits. Although she lived in a higher sphere, she never abandoned me to my fate. The last time we had met, she said she had some new plans in mind, which she would soon tell me. Her attitude of resignation had deeply impressed me, and I awaited her next visit, anxious to know those plans. At last, in early September of 1940, she came to the chambers. After her usual loving greetings, she informed me that she intended to return to the physical plane. In a gentle voice, she unfolded her plan. I was surprised and upset by the idea, and protested, "I really disagree. Why should you return to the flesh? Why begin the weary wandering again without the immediate need to?" In dignified serenity, my mother replied, "Have you forgotten your father's afflicting condition, my son? For many years one have worked to lift him up. but all my efforts have been in vain. Laertes has become a skeptic with a poisoned heart. Should he persist in such an attitude, he might be drawn into deep abysses. What should we do, then? Do you have the heart to see your father in such a condition, and yet refrain from doing everything in our power to help him? Of course not, I answered, greatly affected. I would work hard to help him. But mother, you could find the means of assisting him here. No doubt I could. However, spirits who really love aren't satisfied with lending a helping hand from a distance. What good are all the riches in the world if we can't share them with our loved one? Would you be content to live in a palace from which your children were excluded? No, I can't maintain my distance. Now that I can count on you on this side, I'll join Louisa, and help your father find his way to redemption. After a few minutes of deep thought, I insisted, but mother, are you sure there is no other way to do it? No, it wouldn't be possible. I have thoroughly examined the subject, and all my superiors have agreed with my decision. I can raise the inferior to the superior, but I can do the opposite. There is nothing else I can do, and there mustn't be a minute's hesitation on my part. I have, in you, support for the future. Don't lose your way, my son, and when you are able to go through the spheres that separate us from the earth, give your mother all the assistance in your power. Meanwhile, don't forget your sisters, who may still be in the dark zones undergoing active purification. In a very short time, I'll be back in the physical world, where I'll meet Laertes to carry out the task the Father will assign us. But, I asked, how are you going to meet him? In spirit? No, replied my mother, her face assuming a significant expression, with the help of some friends. I started preparing his immediate reincarnation, and last week I settled him on Earth. He was never aware of any direct help from us, because we availed ourselves at a time when he was trying to escape the women who still subjugated him. This mental attitude was very helpful, and we succeeded in binding him to his new physical body. Is this possible? What about our individual liberty? I asked. Mother smiled rather sadly and explained, there are some reincarnations that are carried out rather drastically, and if the patient lacks the courage to accept the sacred but bitter medicine, his friends help him to swallow it down. The soul can claim unlimited freedom unless it fully understands its duty and performs it. Besides, we must bear in mind that the debtor is a slave to his debts. God created free will, man created vitality. We have to break the chains we ourselves have forged. While I lost myself in deep thought, Mother continued her observations, the poor girls who persecuted him won't give up their intent. Were it not for our spirit guards, he might have been deprived of this opportunity for reincarnation. Good Lord! I exclaimed. Can't it be possible? Are we at the mercy of evil forces to that extent? Are we mere puppets in our enemy's hands? These questions, my child, declared my mother with great serenity, should come from our heart and lips before contracting any moral debt and transforming our brothers into adversaries. Never take any loans from iniquity. And what of these women? I asked. What will become of them? They will be my daughters. Mother answered with a smile. You mustn't forget that I'm returning to the world to help your father. No one is able to assist efficiently by intensifying the enemy's forces. Just as on Earth you can't extinguish a fire with gasoline. Love is indispensable, Andre. Those who disregard this truth go astray and become wanderers in the desert. Those who err leave the highway and gradually sink into the mire. Your father is now a skeptic, and those unhappy women, wading in the mud of ignorance and delusion, carry heavy burdens. In the near future, I'll gather them in my motherly arms, thus accomplishing my new mission. Her eyes shining with unshed tears, gazing at the future horizons, she remarked, and later on, who knows? I may come back to the astral city, bringing along other sacred affections for a great festival of joy, love and union. Full of awed respect for her sublime abnegation, I knelt down and kissed her hands. From that moment my mother was no longer simply my mother to me, but much more. She was also a messenger of divine goodness who could transform her most cruel enemies into children of her heart in order to give them the opportunity to retrace their steps and start anew as true children of God. Chapter 47, Laura's Return. My mother was not the only one preparing to return to the physical sphere. Laura also found herself confronted with this commitment. I learned that many workers in the colony, especially those in the ministries of assistance and regeneration, were planning a farewell party, which was to be held on the evening when the accounting department presented her with her complete service card. It is impossible to express in ordinary words the spiritual significance of that little party. The family's charming residence saw music and light. Even the flowers seemed more beautiful. Many families had come to salute their friend who was about to depart. Most of the visitors left shortly after presenting their farewell wishes. Laura's more intimate friends, however, remained until late that night. Thus I had the opportunity to hear many wise and curious observations. Laura seemed circumspect and grave. I saw that she was making a great effort to join in the general optimism. In the crowded living room she talked with the accounting department representative. I don't believe I'll be staying for more than 2 days. I have finished my conditioning at the preparation service and at the Ministry of Elucidation. With a wistful look, she resumed, as you see, I am ready. The official, in a fraternal tone, spoke encouragingly, wonderful to return to the physical world in your circumstances. In a community of over 1 million people, you have thousands and thousands of hours of useful service in your favor. Besides, the children you are leaving here will continue to be your greatest incentive. All that is indeed most comforting, she answered, unable to hide her deep concern. Yet we mustn't forget that a reincarnation is always an undertaking of the utmost importance. I know that my husband has preceded me and my beloved children will be my constant friends, yet. Come now, don't get caught up in conjecture. Minister Genesius interrupted. We must put up our trust in divine protection and in ourselves. Providence's resources are unlimited. We must break the dark glasses through which we see the physical plane as a bitter exile. Don't think of possibilities of weakness. Visualize only the probability of success. Besides, it's only fair for you to count on us, your friends, a little. As far as vibratory distance is concerned, we won't be far away. Think of the joy of helping old friends and of the sublime glory of being useful. Laura smiled, and apparently more cheerful, remarked, I have enlisted the spiritual assistance of all my companions, so that I may remain mindful of the lessons I have learned here. I realized that the earth is full of divine beauty. It's enough to remember that our sun here is the same one which shines on incarnate people. But, my dear minister, I fear the temporary oblivion that involves us like a dark matter. Although they no longer hurt, the scars remain, the slightest scratch would be enough to make them bleed again. The minister nodded understandingly and resumed, I am not ignoring what the shadows of the lower sphere represent, but we must gather our courage and go on resolutely. We'll help you to work hard for the good of others rather than for self-satisfaction. Remember that the greatest obstacle, now and always, is being caught up in the insidious temptations of selfishness. Here, Laura continued wisely, we can count on the spiritual vibration of most of the colony's inhabitants, who live according to the teaching of the redeeming gospel. Even though our weakness may creep up to the surface, we find our defense in the very atmosphere that surrounds us. On Earth, however, our good resolutions are like a flickering flame in an immense sea of aggressive forces. Don't say that. Answer the generous minister. You mustn't attach so much importance to the influence of the lower zones. It would be the same as arming the enemy against ourselves. The field of ideas is also a battlefield. Any really constructive light we may kindle on earth will shine forever, for the hurricane of human passions can never blow out a single one of God's lights. Our hostess seemed deeply impressed by the minister's words. She radically changed her mental attitude and spoke cheerfully, I am sure that your visit was providential. I need your exhortation to help me summon up all my energies. You are right, our mental zone is a constant battlefield. We must chase evil and darkness out of ourselves, dislodging them and not letting them assume the importance they always claim.
Yes, I see it clearly now. With a pleased smile, Genesius added, remember that, within our own individual world, each idea works as if it were a separate entity. When we nourish the elements of good, we work for our own happiness, because they will develop into our defense. On the other hand, when we cultivate any element of evil, we work to construct a secure base for our enemies.
As the minister stopped speaking, the accounting department official remarked, we must remember that Laura is returning to the earth endowed with extraordinary spiritual credit. This very morning the governor's secretary sent a note to the Ministry of Assistance recommending that the reincarnation experts should take the utmost care in dealing with the genetic background selected to shape our sister's new body.
Oh yes, she said, I asked for it so that I might not be too much affected by the laws of heredity. I have been rather concerned about the blood.
And notice, continued the official, that your merit here is great indeed. The governor himself saw to the measures to be taken in your case.
So don't worry, my dear friend, Genesius exclaimed with a smile. You'll be assisted by numerous friends and companions, all working for your welfare.
Thank God! Laura exclaimed, comforted, your words have done me so much good. Now I know I needed to hear you.
Lysus and his sisters, now including the kind and generous Theresa, showed their sincere joy at their mother's change in attitude.
My mother needs to forget her preoccupations, remarked the devoted medical attendant.
After all, we aren't going to stay here doing nothing.
You are right, she agreed. I'll cherish hope, and will trust in the Lord and in all of you. For the rest of the evening, the conversation generated confidence and optimism, and the return to Earth was discussed as a blessed opportunity to redeem old debts and learn new lessons. As I took my leave late in the evening, Laura said, I hope to see you again tomorrow evening, Andre. We are holding a little intimate gathering. The Ministry of Communication has promised us a visit from my husband. Although he is already bound by physical ties, he'll be brought here with the aid of some good friends. Furthermore, I'll be saying goodbye to you all. Please be sure to come. I thanked her with emotion, and tried hard to keep back the premature tears at the departure of my kind friend.
Chapter 48, The Home Prayer Meeting. A spiritist would not be surprised at what I saw in Liza's home, but to me it was a new and interesting experience. Over 30 people were gathered in his spacious living room. The arrangement of furniture was simple. Comfortable armchair replaced in rows of 12 in front of a platform, where Minister Clarence, who presided over the ceremony, and Laura and her children all sat. About 12 feet away stood a large crystal globe approximately 6 feet tall. Its lower part was wrapped in wires connecting it to a small apparatus, identical to our loudspeakers. Many questions whirled through my mind as I looked around that big room. The visitors had already taken their seats, but I could still hear friendly conversation going on in the different groups. I was sitting beside Nicholas, an old worker at Assistance, so I thought I might ask him for some information. He willingly complied, we are now ready. Just waiting for the order from communication. Our brother Richard is still in his physical childhood, so it won't be difficult for him to leave his material form for a short time. Will he come here? I inquired.
Why not? He answered. Not all incarnate men are chained to the earth. Like homing pigeons which often spend their time flying back and forth between places, there are some incarnate spirits who actually live between two worlds. That, he added, pointing to the equipment, is the cabinet which will show him to us.
But, why inside the crystal globe? Couldn't he present himself outside it?
I asked curiously. We must remember, continue Nicholas, that our emotions can transmit disturbing vibrations. The crystal cabinet is made of insulating material and will protect Richard from our mental energies.
Just then, Lysus answered a phone call from communication. It was time for the meeting to begin. It was 40 minutes past midnight. In answer to my questioning look, Nicholas whispered, only now is there enough quiet in Richard's new earthly home. The whole house must be in silence and his parents asleep. At this early stage of his life, his spirit is still fairly free, not totally confined to the cradle.
Nicholas couldn't continue. Clarence rose and asked for perfect unity of thought and a real fusion of feelings. In the silence that followed, Clarence offered a simple but moving prayer. Then Lysis played beautifully on the flute, filling the room with intense vibrations of peace and enchantment. When the last melodious strains died away, Clarence spoke again. "Brothers," he said, "let us all send Richard our message of love." I saw Laurie's daughters and one granddaughter leave the platform and place themselves near the musical instruments. Lysis followed them. Judith, Yolanda and Lysis respectively approached the piano, harp and zither, while Teresa and Heloisa stood by them composing the family choir. I heard melodious sounds, soft in the beginning, which rose gradually to a rapturous and divine harmony. I felt myself carried to sublime spheres of exalted thought. In a few minutes, Melifla's voices joined in. It was Lysis and his sisters singing a marvelous song of their own composition. It is difficult for me to put those evocative verses, full of spirituality and beauty, into human words. I shall try to reproduce them just to show how beautiful and sublime love is in the spheres of life beyond the shadows of death. Dear Father, when the night at last brings the blessings of sweet rest, remember, kindly Father, well, how much we love and care. While the stars are twinkling the melody they softly sing, bring your heart with us a while. Come to join us in our prayer. Let no trials cause you stress in your brief forgetfulness, not let suffering bring you sorrow. Stay away from evil's pain. Fear no earthly agony. Think of our alliance, and you'll be strong in the knowledge that tomorrow will bring joy's eternal reign. While you are sleeping in the world, in our memories now unfurl heavenly dawns without compare here in this life above. Look to the future happily, wait for us. One day we'll be together once again to share the joys of the garden of your love. Come to us, O Father dear, to the beauty of our sphere. Come again to this, our nest, even though you come in dreams, for a while forget the flesh. Come to drink our water fresh, full of hope and tenderness, from this astral city's streams. Our home has not forgotten you, your sacrifices, your kindness too, and the clarity sublime of your lessons on the way. Come across the shadows great, free yourself from matter's weight, over the mountain you will climb. Come and join us as we pray. As they reached the last words of the song, I noticed that a grayish, milky substance was filling the globe before us. Soon there stood the handsome figure of a middle-aged man. It was Richard. It is difficult for me to describe the sacred emotions of the family as they greeted him. The visitor first addressed himself to his wife and children for a while. Then, casting a friendly look toward us, he requested that we sing the same lovely song once more for him. As he listened to it, he was moved to tears. He then turned to us and said, "Oh, my children, how great Jesus' mercy is, for he has crowned our home circle with tonight's supreme joys. In this very room we have together endeavored to find the way to the higher spheres. We have often received the spiritual bread of life here, and now we have gathered here again to receive this sacred incentive. How happy I am!" Laura wept discreetly, Lysus's and his sister's eyes brimmed with tears. I noticed that the visitor could not speak with ease and apparently had only a short time to stay with us. Probably all the people in the room had a similar impression, because Judith, putting her arms around the crystal globe, exclaimed in loving tones, "Father dear, say what you want us to do, let us know how we can help your devoted heart." Richard looked lovingly at his wife and said in a low voice, "Your mother will soon come and join me, my child. So we all, in time. What else could I wish for to make me happy? Let's ask the Master to bless us forever." We were all moved to tears. When the grayish substance began to form in the globe again, I heard Richard exclaim with emotion, "Listen, my children. I have something to ask you from the bottom of my heart. Pray to the Lord that I may never, on earth, have an easy life, so that the light of gratitude and comprehension may keep always bright in my spirit." The unexpected petition touched and surprised me at the same time. Richard said farewell to all while the grayish curtain gradually enveloped the whole globe. After a few minutes, the globe returned to its ordinary appearance. Minister Clarence closed the ceremony with a prayer, leaving us all with an indescribable feeling of happiness. Our hostess stood on the platform, surrounded by her visitors, all anxious to present their congratulations and farewell wishes. As I approached the group to say goodbye to my kind friend and tell her of my deep impression and gratitude, someone touched me lightly on the shoulder. It was Clarence, who said affably, "Listen, Andre. Tomorrow I will go with our sister Laura to the physical sphere.